Hey, everybody, before we get started today, I am super excited to share with you something we've been working on. We are partnering with Paramount Pictures to give away digital copies of their new movie, Fat Man. Have you guys seen the trailer for this movie? It looks absolutely bonkers. This movie stars Mel Gibson as Santa Claus in what they're calling an outrageous action comedy. When a 12-year-old boy receives a lump of coal in his stocking, he hires a highly skilled assassin to kill Santa Claus. I gotta tell you, I have checked out the trailer for this movie. I can't wait to watch it. It looks like a ton of fun. It looks just insane. Walton Goggins is also in this movie. You might remember him from Django Unchained, one of my favorite parts in that movie, or in Tarantino's The Hateful Eight. I am absolutely on board to check out this movie. Tis the season to get even with this dark action comedy that keeps on giving. Buy or rent Fat Man today. And of course, if you'd like to enter our giveaway, you can find our giveaway post on our Instagram page at Film Whiskey. Let's get to the show. On today's Film and Whiskey, we are getting into the Thanksgiving spirit with the very first of what we hope will be a long series of Hanksgiving episodes. We're checking out the movie Big, and we're trying two whiskeys from the Chicken Cock Company. That's all ahead on Film and Whiskey. Hey, everybody, welcome into the podcast. We are back with another special bonus episode.
Thanksgiving episode.
Yeah, so first of all, we want to wish everybody listening to this a happy Thanksgiving, especially if you're an American, because that makes a lot more sense. If you're Canadian
that's Merry, then this... Merry Thanksgiving to you, sir.
That's right. I was going to say, for our Canadian listeners, this is very belated, because they had Thanksgiving weeks ago. But we are celebrating the American Thanksgiving today, and we thought, what better way to celebrate Thanksgiving than to talk about a film from one of the actors that we are most thankful for here on the Film and Whiskey podcast, and that is our friend Tom Hanks. So we decided that every Thanksgiving, we will be watching one of Tom Hanks's movies, and we're calling it Hanksgiving.
Hanksgiving.
So welcome into Hanksgiving number one. Hopefully in the future, we're going to offer it up to our listeners a bit, maybe give you guys some options to pick from of what the next Hanksgiving movie should be. But we figured for our first time, we would go with a tried and true classic, a movie that we may not get around to in our regular weekly episodes on the podcast, but one that is a really important movie in Tom Hanks's filmography, and that is the 1988 comedy Big.
Yeah, Bob, we kind of discussed a few different movies in this slot, but it just made the most sense that if we're going to start a annual series on, like, probably Hollywood's most beloved actor, that we might as well start early in his career with one of his biggest hits that really launched him into stardom. And that it's got to be Big.
Absolutely.
He is just charming as all get out in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first time he gets nominated for an Academy Award. And I think it says a lot, Brad, first of all, about the kind of movies and the kind of roles that could still get you an Oscar nomination in the 80s, because I just don't think that anyone could take on this role today and get an Oscar nomination out of it. And that's sad because it's a great performance. But again, secondly, I think it also shows just how much Tom Hanks brings to this role. And I was noticing it just in little tiny things that they would do in this movie where, you know, you could have gone out and gotten a better comedic actor, maybe. Not to say that Tom Hanks is a bad comedic actor, but you could have had a guy that really leaned into it and hammed it up a bit. You could have even just gotten somebody like a Michael Keaton, who I think is a phenomenal actor and who Tom Hanks was kind of competing against for a lot of these roles in the 1980s. I think it's a completely different movie. This movie does not work without Tom Hanks in the lead role.
The way they set up Josh Baskin, the main character in this film, is as a lovable 13-year-old, kind of roguish but caring character who's, you know, a little bit shy and he's not super outgoing and he's whenever he's around adults or a cute girl, he kind of clams up a little bit and he's endearing in that way. And so when he becomes an adult, you needed somebody who could convince you that they were still 13 years old at heart.
Right.
And I think that's the key to why Tom Hanks was so good in this role, is because throughout the entire movie, not only do you believe that he's a 13-year-old, but when he starts to make the transition to thinking like an adult, you can almost feel the loss of childhood in the way Hanks represents Josh.
Yeah, for sure. And Brad, I do want to key in on just one element of what you're saying here. And that is that there are a lot of actors who could convincingly, you know, replicate the mannerisms of a 12 or 13 year old, who can really lean into the more comedic elements of feeling awkward around girls or, you know, pretending to act like a little kid. And Tom Hanks has a couple moments like that in this movie. But the reason that this performance works and the reason that the movie works is because more than that, he is able to convey and project this sense of real, pure intention and innocence that you never doubt for a second that this person that you're watching, like you said, not only is only 12 or 13 years old at heart, but that he earnestly is a good person at heart, and that he can convince you that he has the innocence of a 12 or 13 year old and isn't just a grown man pretending to act like a child.
Right. And you see that in the way that Josh interacts with money throughout the film, that even as he makes money and becomes like a pretty well-off adult living in a massive 50-foot ceiling New York apartment, like, even with all of that kind of money, he still stays pure in his tastes and his desires and what he wants to enjoy out of life. And so you just find yourself absolutely charmed by not only, you know, Hanks in this movie, but by the movie itself.
Yeah. Well, Brad, before we go any further, this is going to be basically an abbreviated version of what we do in our weekly episodes. And so that means that we want a really quick explanation when it comes to the plot of this movie, and who better to turn to than our friend Brad G. So, Brad, two questions. Number one, had you ever seen this movie before? And number two, can you explain it to our audience?
Why, yes, Bob, I can do both of those things. I have seen the movie before.
Oh, good. I didn't know that. Okay, cool.
Yeah, I think I've seen it maybe once before when I was in like college or something, maybe late high school.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember enjoying the film. I thought it was really fun and charming. And I think I can do a fantastic job of explaining it because it's a pretty simple film.
Absolutely.
You know, there's not like a massive amount going on. In Big, you have Tom Hanks playing a young boy named Josh Baskin, who is constantly kind of reminded of the fact that he's young and that he's not confident enough and he's not big enough. And so when he has the opportunity to make a wish in front of a old arcade style game called Zoltar Speaks, he wishes that he was big. And the next morning he wakes up as Tom Hanks. And from here on out, you kind of see some crazy things happen. His mom thinks that he's been kidnapped. And so Hanks runs away from home, and with the help of his best friend, he finds a place to live downtown New York City. In looking for jobs, he finds a computer job entering data at a toy company. And while at the toy company, he runs into the boss a few times, and the boss recognizes his aptitude for understanding toys and promotes him to be a vice president of such and such development team or, you know, whatever it is. And so he basically starts testing toys and giving insight onto what kids like. And he rises very quickly in this company, makes all sorts of money. He falls in love with another one of the vice presidents of the company, who she kind of helps him along his way. And you slowly see him start to lose his sense of childhood identity and fall into the world of being an adult. And so there's a conflict that he has to decide, do I want to be a kid or do I want to stay as an adult? And at the end of the film, he finds another Zoltar Speaks machine, wishes to be a kid again, and returns to his home and returns to his childhood.
Boom. There it is. That's the movie Big. Well, thank you for that, Brad. I appreciate that breakdown of the movie. For anyone who hasn't seen it before, this movie did become a huge, huge success. As we said, Tom Hanks was nominated for an Academy Award. This movie was also nominated for an Oscar for Best Screenplay. And I do want to go back to a comment that I made a little bit earlier, Brad, where I was talking about the kinds of movies that would get nominated for an Oscar. I just don't think that Hollywood really leans into making movies like this anymore. There's a very specific, like, subgenre of movies from the late 80s, early 90s that I think fall into the kind of tone that this movie goes for, where it's like, It's a comedy. It's meant to be a comedy, but it's also completely unironically trying to pull for your heartstrings. And it's like, it's trying very hard to get you to go see it with your like 40 something year old mom. And then when you leave, she says, "That was cute." You know what I mean? It's going for the 40 something woman to call it cute demographic. And like, I think about this movie. I think about Mrs. Doubtfire, I think falls right into this. I think Home Alone falls right into this. And I don't think we can go much further without talking about the director of this movie, Penny Marshall, who was in some ways kind of the queen of this kind of movie. You know, we've done a Penny Marshall movie on the podcast before when we did Awakenings. A couple years after this, she would go on to do A League of Their Own, which I also think kind of has some of the same elements as this movie does. And I guess I'm just wondering, Brad, like, do you see movies like this being made anymore where it's just like it's set out to be a lighthearted, don't take us too seriously, but also we're completely earnest kind of movie?
I mean, I think every once in a while you see things like this, but honestly, I haven't seen them for a while. Honestly, I think something like The Rookie from Disney back in like 2002 or three, like that might be one of the few movies that it's just a standalone, fun, charming little movie that's not trying to be anything bigger than what it is. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And so it's hard to find those movies because A, they don't really have a lot of income potential. I'm sure that if I saw Big in 1988, I might see it twice, but you're not going to get tons and tons of repeat customers. It's not going to be able to be turned into a franchise. It's not like little kid enough to draw in the little kids to see it 30 times. But it's also not like Big or Bad enough to draw adults to see it multiple times. So like, what's the point of making movies like this, Bob?
Yeah, I mean, I guess you do kind of bring up a good question, which is like, who is the target audience for this movie? And that's not to say that I don't think they absolutely nail it, because I think they do. This movie is just super entertaining and I think appeals to a really broad audience. And I will also preface this by saying I think kids in the 80s we're used to seeing more adult material in kids' movies than our kids are now. I mean, like, this movie came out just a few years after they invented the PG-13 rating, largely because of movies like Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
And movies like E.T., where your main child actor is getting just tanked. So
and is using, like, really foul language. So
yeah.
So that's the thing, is, like, this movie, I think, really does appeal to 12-year-old boys. And yet, it's also structured and written in a really clever way for the adults in the room. And so I guess I kind of found myself struggling as far as, like, how seriously am I supposed to take this movie? How much should I even really care about the plot holes? Or is it just like, hey, this is a movie about some magic that happens. We're never going to explain how it happens. And, like, we're never really going to examine the fallout of this story that we're telling. Because, like, if you think about it for more than 5 seconds, I'm like, poor Josh's mom. Like, she's emotionally traumatized for life. Poor Susan. Yeah. Like, she has to live with the fact that she, you know, slept with a 13-year-old boy. We're just not concerned with any of that. And I think at the end of the day, you kind of just have to be like, all right, you can choose to look at it as a very flawed movie, or you can choose to look at it as a movie that's just made for young people. And they're not going to ask those questions. And so at the end of the day, it's like, I think I'm just like, I'm done being cynical and skeptical about movies like this. I'm just going to give myself over to it and have a good time. And that's what I did with this movie.
I really think that you're having a good attitude about this, Bob. And by good, I mean like the proper attitude.
The correct one.
The correct one. Exactly. Like, I don't think that you should go into a movie like this looking to pick all of the nits that you can find. Because sure, there's some problems in this movie, but in the end, I think the movie is heavily invested and concerned with the question, what would it be like if a 13-year-old suddenly became an adult?
Yeah.
And yeah, you know, Josh's mom probably is, you know, traumatized for the rest of her life, but the movie isn't about her. It's not about Susan. It's about Josh and his experience becoming an adult, thrust into this world full of responsibility and headaches and issues, and you know what? How is he going to make it? And so, if there's any problems that I have with the movie, It's a little more with the fact that he doesn't actually have any problems as an adult.
Yeah.
that any of the problems he faces aren't really that big of an issue, and that he just kind of, it feels like a big old pitch meeting full of things that we need to get off his back about.
Well, Brad, we can nitpick a little bit when we come back from our break, but I think it's time for us to drink some whiskey. And so I want to transition us into drinking our whiskeys for the day. When we were talking about what whiskeys we should be drinking for this bonus episode, I think the obvious thing to be drinking on Thanksgiving would be something from Wild Turkey. But on our bonus episodes, we like to feature smaller, more craft distillers or whiskeys with smaller distribution, and Wild Turkey is available everywhere. So we were kind of looking through the list of things we've been sent, and we said, you know what, let's just keep it kind of poultry themed here. And we're going to be drinking whiskeys from Chicken Cock today. Now, Chicken Cock was actually one of the most popular whiskey brands in America for about 100 years until it shuttered in the 1950s, early 1960s. And that brand has been revived, as we're seeing with a lot of brands in the world of Kentucky bourbon now. And at first, they were sourcing their whiskey. And now what I'm seeing is that the Chicken Cock company is actually starting to do like a proprietary mash bill that they're having made at the Bardstown Bourbon Company site. So I think what we're drinking here, Brad, is still some of the sourced whiskey, but now they're starting to get into making, aging their own whiskey. Chicken Cock is a really well-respected brand. It just doesn't have a huge distribution. In fact, it's not carried in the state of Ohio. So we are very, very grateful to the company for sending us these two samples. And before us today, Brad, we have their straight bourbon whiskey and their straight rye whiskey.
Yeah, I'm really excited to get into these, Bob. I've been nosing them a little bit, and I think that their bourbon has a fantastic nose to it.
Absolutely, Brad. This has like those layers of rich, dark char and peanut butter that I love on whiskeys. It's reminding me some of the better samples of Elijah Craig that we've had, some of the better samples of Henry McKenna that we've had. Now, this one is clocking in at 90 proof, so I imagine that if it tastes like either one of those, it would be a little more similar to Elijah Craig. But it's this really beautiful, dark, nutty nose.
Yeah, I feel like I took a whiff of this, and in my brain, I immediately went, man, it's been a while since we just had like a normal classic bourbon.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
You know what? And Brad, I just took a sip of it. And I will say this, for us who are now used to drinking like incredibly high proof bourbons, this stuff drinks like water. And yet, I don't think that's a bad thing at all. It is not super complex. It's very, very sweet. It's just like sugary, almost like a sweet tea kind of flavor to me. But then it has a little bit of that nuttiness to it. And on the back end, you get a lot of barrel char. Brad, I would say, and I'm not exaggerating here, I can't think of a whiskey that we've had in the last, I don't know, 6 months or so that I would recommend to a beginning whiskey drinker above this Chicken Cock bourbon. Like for 90 proof, it is incredibly drinkable. I would think that it was even lower proof than that, because the alcohol is not harsh at all. It's just a really, really pleasant drinking experience.
Yeah, this is just such a great bourbon. Like, if you looked up in the dictionary for easy sipper, they would put a picture of this Chicken Cock bourbon right next to it. It is so smooth. It's not just inoffensive. It has just such nice, light flavors that just kind of hit your palate, and it almost like wakes your palate up. It's kind of like, oh, there's a little bit of peanut butter, there's a little bit of nuttiness, there's a little bit of vanilla, here's some caramel, oh, and here's your barrel char. It's really just smooth all the way across.
I wish that I had more information to share with our listeners about this, but because these are samples and I don't have the bottles, I don't have the sell sheets, and their website doesn't contain a ton of information. I don't know the exact mash bill of this, Brad. I don't know how long it was aged for. It's no age stated. We do know that, I mean, it's straight bourbon, so it's definitely not aged under 2 years for sure. However, I mean, like, if you can find a bottle of this, especially if you're just looking to get into the world of whiskey, I cannot recommend this highly enough. This is fantastic.
Yeah, I would be curious to know the age statement, because when I move on to nosing the rye, I think I'm picking up a decently young whiskey, Would you say that's where it's at, Bob?
You know what? I don't know if I would call this young or not, Brad. I'm sure that it probably is on the younger side, just given, you know, what the whiskey is, the fact that it is only 90 proof, things like that. But, like, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but this has a nose that reminds me almost of, almost of bar soap. Like, it has that kind of waxy floral note to it that reminds me of soap in a way. And again, like, that sounds like a terrible note to pick up on the nose. I don't mean that to be the case. What I'm saying is that I don't think it smells like flowers so much as it smells like a scented kind of hand soap or something like that. It's definitely incredibly floral in nature. I really, really like it. I can see how it might be coming across to you, Brad, as young grain. But for me, the grain isn't what's standing out here. It's that really dominant, strong, almost like rosewater kind of scent to it.
Yeah, it's an interesting nose. I'm getting that little bit of floralness. It definitely has a similar quality to the bourbon in that it has kind of a light, airy nose to it that's not pushing itself on my senses.
If I wanted to be blunt about how this smells, Brad, like, it smells like old lady soap. Like, that's what it smells like to me. I hate to say it like that because I actually really enjoy the scent of this whiskey. But it just smells like the kind of soap that they would be marketing to, like, you know, the geriatric crowd.
We all know that you look like you're 60, Bob, but you can stay away from the old lady soap for a few more years.
And Brad, when I take a sip, I think some of the youngness of the grain does come out a little bit. But again, it's so inoffensive. There's so little alcohol burn. I think this one would be interesting to kind of offer to a new rye drinker because you get the flavor of the rye grain with very little burn. And I almost wonder if that's a good thing or a bad thing, Brad, because this drinks even more like water than the first one did. And I'm not saying I dislike it, but I think if you are anybody but an inexperienced whiskey drinker, I don't know if there's a lot here for you.
Yeah, if I had to rank them, I think I would probably put the bourbon at like a 33 to 35 out of 50, like a really solid above average whiskey. I think I'd put the rye in like about 10 points less, like a 23 to 25.
And see, like, I enjoy it. And I don't know if I would rate it that low because I don't think it's bad. I just think that it, you know, it's kind of like the big of whiskeys. Like, it's definitely made for a certain crowd of people. And I think that if you're looking for like a big, bold, spicy, complex, barrel proof rye, you're going to be wholly disappointed in this. But that doesn't mean that there isn't a group of people that this is perfect for. And I think especially like if you have someone in your life that doesn't drink rye or who hasn't been a rye drinker historically, this would be a really great entry point into rye.
Yeah, I think it's a solid rye. I'm just, I guess when you just drink them back to back, I'm just sitting here going, man, their bourbon is like pretty daggone good. And I'm a little bit underwhelmed by their rye. But I think the Chicken Cock is onto something here. They're a fun little distillery. I'm very thankful that they would send us these samples. And I would heavily encourage you, go check their stuff out. They are giving you some impressive whiskey. Their bourbon, really, though, it's a great porch drinker, man. I think I'm going to hold on to this sample for a while.
Yeah, I really like it a lot. Well, Brad, what do you say we get back into talking about the movie Big?
Let's get to it.
All right, so that was Chicken Cock Bourbon and Chicken Cock Rye. We are getting back into talking about the movie Big. Brad, in the spirit of Thanksgiving, I say we close this bad boy out today by talking about things in this movie that we are grateful for. So maybe, you know, a really good performance, a great scene, a great line. Instead of nitpicking, because we know there's problems with this movie, let's just talk about things that we really, really loved. So why don't you start us off, Brad? What's something in this movie that you are thankful for?
You know, Bob, one of the things that I am most thankful for in this movie is Jared Rushton as Tom Hanks' best friend, Billy.
What a great child actor.
Like, he just nails it in this movie. Like, he's not really over the top. He's just like the perfect little, like, 13-year-old I just really think he is one of the most charming aspects of this film.
Well, especially in that scene where they kind of have their confrontation with each other, where, you know, you can tell that Tom Hanks's character, Josh, is becoming too much of an adult, and Billy comes in and confronts him. He holds his own in that scene against Tom Hanks. And it's not
Dude,
even,
he drops an F-bomb well, I mean, at not, Tom Hanks.
Not even just that it's not even just that he convincingly portrays being angry. It's that, like, you can tell Tom Hanks isn't trying to bail him out in that scene. Your attention is very evenly split between the two. Tom Hanks is definitely underplaying a little bit, but, like, for a child actor, it doesn't seem ridiculous. It doesn't seem forced. It seems entirely natural. Like, he does a great job in this movie.
He really, really does. But I'm curious, Bob, what is it that you're thankful for in this film?
Brad, I mean, I don't think I can go much further in this episode without talking about Elizabeth Perkins, because I think she is just perfect in this movie. You have to have a strong lead to balance out Tom Hanks. You have to have someone who has really good comic timing, which she does. I think her motivations sometimes can seem a little muddied to the viewer, but as an actress, I think she does everything that she can with the script that she was given. And especially the very last scene of the movie where you see Tom Hanks walking away from her and then kind of becoming a child again. It is, like, kind of emotional because of the way she plays that scene. She is, I mean, I think she's pitch perfect in this movie, Brad. And I can't imagine when this movie came out how many 12-year-old boys got crushes on her because they saw Tom Hanks, a 12-year-old boy, you know, fall in love with her. There must be a whole mini generation of people who saw Elizabeth Perkins in Big and had a huge, you know, movie star crush on her for a while. I just think she's fantastic in this movie.
Well, I think the one place where the writing really shined in this movie is that there's almost an inverse relationship between adulthood and childhood with the two main characters, you know, played by Tom Hanks and Elizabeth Perkins, that as the movie progresses, Hanks slowly goes from being more childlike to becoming more adult-like, and Perkins goes from being this jaded, cynical adult to somebody who believes in the little fun things of life and is able to engage her inner child, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I really think that you watch her become more open and earnest and honest. And it's just attractive. Like, she plays the role so, so well. And I was just really impressed, not only with her performance, but with the writing for her character.
I'm going to be honest, Brad. I think top to bottom, this cast is really great. I mean, I think Robert Loggia as the toy company boss, that great scene on the piano, like, he nails it. I think that John Hurd nails it. In every movie, he is underappreciated for being the over-the-top, smarmy bad guy. And he just plays it so well.
Yes.
I still don't get it.
What?
What don't you get, Judge?
Well, there's a million robots that turn into something. And this is a building that turned into a robot. What's fun about playing with a building? That's not any fun.
This is a skyscraper.
Well, couldn't it be like a robot that turns into something like a bug or something?
A bug?
Yeah. Like a big prehistoric insect with maybe like giant claws that could pick up a car and crush it like that.
A prehistoric transformer?
Interesting.
Gentlemen.
So the robot turns into a bug.
Gentlemen, listen
to him.
Just
got a very good idea here.
We had him a few months ago in Awakenings, kind of playing this same character, Brad. And we don't pause to appreciate how well he cut out that corner of the market in the late 80s and early 90s, because he's just so good at playing it.
He really did. I will say, I was very confused by his relationship with Susan in the movie.
Yeah.
I was kind of like, I don't really know what's going on here. They kind of live together, but that was probably one of the only points of writing that I was not thankful for.
Well, and again, you know, we could get into the nitpicks that we have with the story. You know, I already said, you kind of have to forgive a lot of plot holes if you want to get through this movie, which I can do. I think you take this movie at face value. It's an enjoyable movie. I think for the most part, it still really holds up well in 2020, minus that one incredibly problematic scene. But Brad, I, like, again, at the end of the day, I think this movie holds up a hell of a lot better than The Breakfast Club does in terms of problematic scenes that we can't really talk much about anymore. So, you know, as we kind of wind down today, Brad, why don't we go ahead and give our final scores for this movie? I'd like to hear what you think of overall of the movie Big.
You know, I will say every single 80s movie we have watched for this podcast has left me bitter and frustrated and disappointed in the 80s as a decade. I just don't think they knew what they were doing as a human race.
As a people.
We did not know what we were doing in the 80s, but a movie like Big, it almost refreshes my hope for humanity, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10, Bob.
Wow.
I think it's charming. I think it's funny. For what it aims to be, it's kind of like when we talk about balance on a whiskey. Like, it works smoothly across all the areas. Is it a 10 out of 10 in any one area? No, not really. But it's so good in each area that I was leaning towards giving it an 8, probably an 8.5. But the balance score really brought me up. It just does all of the different things at like an 8.5 level that I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10 overall.
Wow. Yeah, Brad, you know what? I think part of me wants to give it a 7. Part of me wants to give it a 7.5, but it's Thanksgiving. I'll give this movie an 8 out of 10. It's charming. It works. Tom Hanks is fantastic. You know, that one scene where he's first staying in the hotel overnight and he gets really scared and starts crying like a little kid. And I noticed that they just left the camera on him. It was just one unbroken shot for probably 35, 45 seconds. And when you have a lead actor that you can trust enough to just leave the camera on and can bring the emotion like that in an unbroken shot, you know you've got something special on your hands. And I think this is when America realized that they had something special on their hands with Tom Hanks, because he really just takes off from here. I am so, so excited, Brad, to continue to go through his filmography in the coming years with our Hanksgiving series. But we're going to wrap this one up here by giving Big an 8.5 out of 10 overall. And we'd like to know what you think. So please, get on social media. You can let us know what you think of this movie by finding us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, at Film Whiskey.
Or you can give us a phone call. Our phone number is 216-800-5923. Once again, that number is 216-800-5923. Or you can leave us a voicemail on our website, which can be found at anchor.fm/filmwhiskey.
We'll be back on Monday with another regularly scheduled episode. But until then, from our households to yours, happy Thanksgiving. Thank you so much for listening. And for the Film and Whiskey Podcast, I'm Bob Book.
I'm Brad G.
And we'll see you next time. Film and Whiskey is produced, engineered, and edited by Bob Book and Brad G. And it's made possible from support from listeners like you. If you'd like to support the show, you can donate directly to us at our Anchor page, anchor.fm/filmwhiskey, where you can support the show for as little as $1 a month. Or if you'd like some perks, donate to our Patreon page. You can find us on patreon.com/filmwhiskey, where for as little as $3 a month, you'll receive benefits like membership to an exclusive Discord chat room, extended cuts of each episode, and early access to every Film and Whiskey episode. We want to say thank you again to our Patreon supporters, especially those sponsoring us at our highest viscosity level, and that includes our friends Corey Easterday, James Talbert, Austin Dupree, and Aperture Flash. We'll see you next week.